Radio Gorgeous, giving you a voice. Over to you now. Hello and welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Gorgeous Gossip. My name's Josephine Pembroke.
And I'm Donna Freed.
So what have you been up to, my darling?
I found a new vegetable.
What do you mean? What, in your veg box?
No, I found it at Sainsbury's.
Oh, Sainsbury's.
A taste the different flower sprouts. Have you ever seen them?
So they're the brassica sprout family.
I have no idea. This brassica thing.
Brassica, so well, there's other things. Brassica is a kind of plant. So other things that are brassica are...
Are cabbages brassicas?
Yeah, cabbages are brassica. Right.
Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts are brassica.
This is like a Brussels sprout. Check it out. Yeah. It's a Brussels sprout, but instead of the leaves going in and being pale green, the leaves go out like a flower and they're dark green. So instead of all these people going, kale is so 2014. It's all about the flower sprout. Okay. And it's delicious. It tastes like Brussels sprouts. So to some people, that's not delicious. But this is a dark, leafy green vegetable that looks like a flower.
Wonderful. And so when did you eat it?
I've eaten like three packages. I keep trying to... I give some to my husband, I give some to my son. He's like, I don't want to try them. And then I'm like, good, because I want them all myself.
God, so you're really mad on them.
They are a go-to vegetable. Now, what did you do?
Okay.
You were in the vegetable bin?
No, I wasn't. In fact, I have started getting Abel and Cole vegetables delivered. And the other day, these really crappy-looking potatoes arrived. They're covered in mud and they were tiny. And I thought, oh, new potatoes, how boring. And my husband scrubbed them and cooked them and they're blue.
Ah, they're I love blue potatoes.
I've never heard of them. So tonight we're having them mashed, mashed blues. I don't know whether they'll taste any difference, but it's exciting. So what I want to talk about this week, which it hasn't affected me personally, but it's been such a big story out there. The Sun newspaper have quietly withdrawn page three. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of people power. The founder of No More Page Three is called Lucy Ann Holmes. She's got 37,000 followers on Twitter. She's got loads of people to sign up. And it wasn't just women signing up.
I just find it bizarre that it's, you know, it's news. It's, you know, a newspaper. Do you want your kids seeing that?
Well, that's exactly what, when they interviewed, they went to a kind of a man's calf and they asked people and they said, well, the reason I don't buy it is I wouldn't like a good daughter of mine doing it for a start, but I don't want my family looking at it. Mm. So they're saying that sales might even go up now because... they have still got page three in a way, but it's not called page three. I went and bought it today.
Yeah, what have we got?
What we've got is, I think you'll be quite shocked when you see it actually, Donna.
Oh, so we don't have page three girls.
What they are is they are women. One of them's Jordan, but they've both got massive boobs and they're covered up.
Yes.
So that's what they are. They're going to have pretty girls. Like yesterday, they had Hollyoaks actresses.
I'm sorry, but that's still a porn shot. So it's like the Bravissimo catalog. And but it's definitely more come hither as opposed to, don't you want to look like this?
Yes, yes.
So it's more of Victoria's Secret.
So, I mean, that's a compromise.
But do you want, I mean, I know I'm looking at a Victoria's Secret catalog. I know I'm looking at an Ann Summers catalog. I'm not looking at the news.
Yes, yes.
But you know?
This is what sells newspapers, though, and that's what it's about. But also, I just want to talk about page three, because you weren't in Britain in the 80s.
No.
But I worked in a kind of dubious place at one point, because I was always trying to be a performer, called School Dinners, where you kind of dressed up in school uniform and served men food. And I did it because I got paid a lot of money, usually about 50 or 60 quid at lunchtime.
Sexy schoolgirl.
Which was good then, yeah. And I was the kind of only so-called posh one there, and all the girls were working class. And they used to say, all I want to do is be a page three girl. And I'd think, oh, God, how awful. But then now looking back, I've realised why, because they were uneducated, they're ambitious, and it was the only outlet for them, because there wasn't the internet, so there was no way of, like, inventing yourself or making things on YouTube or having blogs or making yourself famous through that. And then there was no reality TVs.
It does put them on a treadmill of making money as being a celebrity, though.
Exactly. So because there are very successful page three girls. Mm. And there are three I can think of at the moment. That's Samantha Fox, who sold 30 million records, and she was number one in 17 countries.
Mm. And so she, but the singing career came out of being a page three girl.
Yes, age 16, she started off. And then there was another person called Linda Lusardi, and she's a kind of girl about town, and she's done a lot of acting is her thing that she's gone into. And she always does all, you know, Cinderella and all that sort of thing. But she's, you know, she makes a career out of acting and being a character, celebrity. And then Jordan, Katie Price. I mean, look how successful she is. So you can understand why women then wanted to do page three. I mean, I do think it's time for it to go, though. I really, really do. Because, you know, if you want pornography, you can go to the internet.
RadioGorgeous.com.
But what I've got is I've got some interesting facts about page three.
Do tell.
Yes. Jerry Halliwell was a page three girl.
Really?
Yeah, when she was 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. When Sam Fox was doing it in the kind of 80s and 90s, you could be 16 or 17 to do it. But then in 2006, the Sex Offence Act came out and you had to be 18. So at least that got...
Yeah, exactly. That saved some saved some girls. Okay.
In July 97, the actual Sun readers put a ban on fake boobs. They said they're completely sick of seeing blown up bosoms. They wanted real ones, which I think is quite good.
You're like, who are you to be so picky? You
know? Yeah.
You know? I mean, come on, you got a boob for breakfast with your paper and your coffee and your muffin, you know.
But then my favorite thing that I found out today was page seven.
Page seven?
What's yes.
Page seven?
In the late 80s, it starts at page seven, which was topless men. And so there were people like David Gandy. I've seen a few shots of men with sort of mullets, you can imagine, because it was the 80s.
Big droopy mustaches.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It could be Hoxton now.
Yeah. And they all bare-chested, but apparently it was dropped in the 90s due to unpopularity. No one was that interested.
Lack of interest.
Exactly. Which I think is brilliant. But there has also been a backlash. Rian Sugden, who's 28, who's a page three model, says she's against the comfy shoe wearing, no bra wearing man haters that started this.
Yeah, well.
And Jodie Marsh, have you heard of Jodie Marsh? Okay. She loved doing page three. She earned loads of money and she felt very empowered being paid. And she says in a tweet, I'm very much a feminist. I believe women can do it all and have it all. Women who slag off other women are just jealous and insecure.
Mm. Well, including the woman who's slagging, you know, the page three one who's slagging off the ones who were against it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, out of 37,000 campaigners, there's a lot of different people in that. And there's a lot of people for it. I'm all for women being entrepreneurial. It worries me. It sets up using your sexuality for money making. It's that brings your sexuality into the public part of your life. And then where's your private part of your life? It just worries me for the people. And it also worries me for the audience. It brings their sexual life to breakfast, you know, over a newspaper. And that, I don't agree with that either. Anyway, I'm glad it's no longer, but okay, so we don't see nipples, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's Murdoch trying to be popular again.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's on one hand it's good, but I don't think it's as good as it could be. I mean, if it just didn't have them.
Yes, I was so excited about opening the newspaper. Yeah. Today, because I thought, I'm going to go and buy it and see what's there. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
There's two women there with ginormous fake boobs. They're obviously allowed on because this isn't page three.
I know. I was going to say, Jodie Marsh has gotten in there under that radar.
And they're wearing tiny bathing costumes and looking very suggestive.
Alas, two steps forward and about 20 million back.
Thank you so much, Donna, for coming on and giving your views.
And my hooters. You didn't know. I'm a page three girl. Just kidding.
Three men, when I first came to London, stopped me and wanted me to go. Three different photographers and wanted me to go and do page three, but I never contacted them because I thought, no way, because I haven't got the bosoms. Also, I just didn't want to do it. So I have got a little bit of restraint at times.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
And now let's go and meet our guest of this week, who is a feminist, Charlie Braid. She's been on before and she gave us, she said what it's like to be 24 and be a feminist. But part of her feminist drive was she applied to go on a BBC TV programme called Tribal Wives. And she went to go and live with some nomads. And it's really fascinating stuff. Let's go and hear what it was like living in a tent with seven people and with a man with two wives. Today on Radio Gorgeous, I'd like to introduce Charlie Braids, who is a journalist, TV assistant producer. Charlie also writes about feminism, politics and social issues. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've been in a reality show like no other. It was called Tribal Wives. Can you tell me about it?
Well, the Tribal Wife series was born out of the Bruce Parry Tribe series on BBC, and they wanted to do a series with a woman. So they took everyday women of varying ages and life experiences, and kind of each of them had their own experience with a different tribe from all over the world.
And you were one of the people picked. So where was your tribe?
My tribe, well, it was in Turkey. It was in the mountains between Syria and Turkey. They're called the Yoruks.
So very far east.
Yeah. And I remember you don't get told where you're going before you go. So you turn up to the airport and they said, we're going to Turkey. And at first I was a bit disappointed, but actually they were like a nomadic Muslim tribe and they travelled around the mountain plateau with their cattle. And it was so far removed to anything I knew about Turkey or Turkish people. So it was really, really exciting.
So were they Kurds, these people?
They're nomadic kind of Turkish people. And there's only about 2,000 of them left. And they just... Wow. Basically travel around the mountain plateaus with their farmers. They move around and their lifestyle is quite old fashioned, but it's kind of quite slowly dying out because the Turkish government wants them to settle. So it's almost like travellers in Europe.
So how do they travel, these people?
The family I was with, we had three camels, 60 goats, four dogs and a cat. And we had to basically strap up the camels with the tent. Nine of us lived in one tent, so we kind of put everything on the back of the tent, and they also had a van, though.
So it's like they're allowed to be a bit modern then. I suppose it's like nowadays, like people are allowed kind of real caravans, not gypsy caravans. We can't be too, we can't judge them too much. They're allowed a car and a van.
Exactly.
So what about the language barrier? Because what, did they speak a dialect?
Yes, they did. They spoke a Turkish dialect, but I have no knowledge of Turkish language at all. So there was a huge language barrier. And I was there for a month and I managed to pick up a few words here and there. But we mainly used sign language to communicate with each other.
Did that work?
It does to an extent, because if you want to talk about something quite complicated, it doesn't. But then if you're fetching wood to make a fire and you just have to watch how they're doing things and copy them, and lots of mistakes were made.
How big was the family then?
So there was nine of us in this family that stayed in this one tent. There was the father, kind of like the head of the family, had two wives and their children. So
how old was he then?
He was in his late 50s, and his first wife was a similar age, and his second wife was actually the same age as me, so when I was there, I was 24, and she was also only a couple of years older than his oldest daughter. So there's like a real range of people living in this one tent.
But you're all in one room, how do they make babies?
Well, the first wife and me was down one end with me, and then the second wife was with him on the other side of the tent, so as you can imagine, it was all...
But was there any privacy then?
No, no privacy at all.
And so what happens if they... Did you hear them having sex?
Yeah. And it's just really surreal, because it was never something that was done, like, in front of everybody in daylight. It was something at night, and the other family members made fun of it rather than taking it too seriously or thinking it was a taboo, because when you live like that, there's kind of no other choice, really.
I mean, the thing is, you couldn't really enjoy it knowing everyone else was around. Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime. What about feminism, sexism? You know, I mean, could you put that into context there?
Well, I think I was probably a bit naive when I first went into it. All the programs I'd seen on television, like Bruce Perry, like Michael Palin, all the anthropologists traveling around and doing these crazy kind of adventurous things. And then you quite quickly realise that, women don't do those things. Like, when I arrived, I spent time going, I went out hunting with the men and shot like a rifle with them. So I was like messing around and muck around with the men. And I hadn't realised I was really being let off all the tasks the women had to do. So I had to really buckle down and do the washing, do the cooking, and kind of maintain the area they're living in, because it's hard work when there's so many of you in such a small space. And kind of being confronted with a man who's got two wives quite openly, it's something you're not really used to at all. But then seeing their relationships were amazing. They're like really, really close family. Even the two wives, who you'd think would hate each other or feel some sort of competition, they're just really, really close because they know they have to be. They know that that's how it is. And to see that sort of strength was really inspiring and amazing.
Yes, because they're not allowed to have time for jealousy. Like, in a way, it's a sort of indulgence that we have, in the West, that we can think, I don't like her, or as they just think, I'm in this together, let's get on with it. So it's actually more positive. So the women did domestic work, would you describe it as?
Yeah, they did a lot of the hard physical labour as well, because they were obviously cooking and cleaning, they did all of it. And with the shepherding, because with 60 goats, that's a hell of a lot of goats for a handful of women to look after. And
so it was women that looked after goats?
Yeah, and the kind of milking and, moving them around, and the camels, these huge camels, taking them out to sort of pasture and finding them places to eat and drink. It's constant and it's hard and it's heavy work as well.
What's heavy then?
When you've milked the cows, bringing all the milk back into the tent and churning it and making it into cheese. And things like, we slaughtered a few goats when we were there to eat, and the dirty work of skinning it and preparing it and, looking after all that stuff is really hard work. It was absolutely baking when we were up there.
What time of year was it?
I went in June for a month, so it was boiling, boiling hot.
Now, I'm interested to know, the women sound like they did pretty much everything. Did the men do anything?
They spent a lot of time sleeping. As I mentioned, the youngest son, his name was Sadat, he was very liberal-minded and he would help out with a lot of things. But the other two, they slept a lot of the day and were fed and kind of just lazed about. And that, I've never seen anything like that, to be honest.
So were the women aware of it?
Yeah, they were. They're really clever and I think that's the reason why there's no animosity or jealousy between them, because they understand their situation. They kind of make their lives within themselves.
Help each other out.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. When I first started, I thought it was really great fun running around with the men, because they were playing. We could go and have fun. And then once I started doing the women's work with the women and being with them, we longed for the days when the men weren't there, because then that was a time where the women could relax and laugh and joke, and they just had such an amazing sense of humour. And they had this old radio that had some old Turkish songs on it, and they'd play it in the tent and we'd be dancing, and then the men would come and we'd have to put it away. And
so why do they act differently in front of a man?
It's just to do with their tradition and the way that they've been brought up to believe they should be. The structure of their family is, if you've got children and you're a woman, you need to look after them because the men aren't going to. And that, I think, your priorities are to just take care of the children and try and, do that the best you can.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Now, they are Muslims. Were they religious?
They were, I'd say they were culturally very religious, but not as spiritually as I'd expected. I'd expected we'd be praying a lot and we'd be trying to adhere to certain laws and values, but they're very relaxed. The main thing was being and wearing headscarf all day and all night. Like, if I fell asleep and my scarf fell off, someone would put it back on.
You wear long clothes?
Yeah, long sleeves, long trousers. I was taken out of my clothes as soon as I arrived and given their set clothes.
And were they comfortable clothes?
They were very comfortable. They were so comfortable. The only thing was, it's so hot, and when it's hot you don't really want to wear a You know, yeah. wear long yeah. sleeves and a headscarf. It's, yeah. it's boiling.
What about being filmed? I mean, you know, you're doing yeah. all this, but at the same time, who was the film crew?
Well, yeah, there was four of them that came with us. We had a translator as well. When we first arrived, it was kind of great fun because the first time I did anything, they would film it. But then after we'd done all those firsts of milking the goats and herding, then they had to disappear. There was a conscious moment when they said that they were going to try and stop the translator coming as much because I wasn't integrating with the family, because it's so much easier to speak to someone who speaks your language yeah. and who's surprised by what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was kind of playing to them more.
Exactly. Yeah, and there were some solitary days where they didn't come to film and you're on your own. I needed to do it, but that was really tough.
Now, as a young woman, and as you said, probably idealistic, what did you take from this experience?
I think the strength of the women and their bond, even though the situation they're in, because for me, coming into that family and seeing the way they were treated, it was really tough, and it's something that I would kind of fight back against, but being out there and realising that they don't have anybody that they can talk to about that. Like if something was happening to you, you'd go to your friends and family outside of that situation. But they're on their own there. And to see the way, how resilient they are and how liberal they are in the way that they viewed each other and understood each other was just really, really amazing. And they're full of love, which sounds really silly, but we often forget that in our culture, that you know, they just accepted me just completely without question, and it made me kind of really check myself in the way I maybe judge other people or things people do and say.
Lovely to have you on Radio Gorgeous today. Absolutely fascinating. So Charlie Braids, you can follow her on Twitter at Charlie Braids, and her blog with more and more fascinating insights is recognisethespin.com. All this information is on our website. Go to radiogorgeous.com for more. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you very much.
I mean, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. Thank you so much for our editor, Ella Gray Thomas. This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com 2015.